This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the leading U.S. Republican and Democratic Party presidential contenders see their popularity moving in opposite directions. Migrants threaten to overwhelm Greece.
There is a bottleneck as people need to be registered by the police, but the police is overwhelmed. They are overworked. They have been working for 20 hours nonstop.
Iraq's Yazidis get help from America's heartland. And a somewhat tarnished pop star comes back. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. The 2016 U.S. presidential election is still 446 days away, but the race for the White House is dominating much of American domestic news right now. Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton are currently the two frontrunners for their party's nominations. But their political fortunes seem to be diverging at the moment, with Mr. Trump getting a boost from the latest opinion polls and Mrs. Clinton getting bogged down by a controversy over her use of private email while serving as Secretary of State. International Edition's Michael Lippin spoke with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone about how both contenders are doing, starting with Donald Trump.
We've got a couple of polls, national polls, we're looking at that show, again, Donald Trump in the Republican field doing pretty well. He leads with, depending on which poll you look at, 24-25% of the vote. In one poll, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush is second. In another poll, it's the retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson, a newcomer. What we're interesting to note here is that the non-politicians like Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and to some degree, Carly Fiorina, the former CEO, are doing quite well. People seem to be looking for something different on the Republican side. They want a fresh approach. They don't want the old political approach we've seen. And I think you combine Trump's billionaire status, the fact he doesn't have to take campaign donations, with his blunt style, and you've got someone who's tapping into this anger and frustration in the country that to them is refreshing, and that's why Trump continues to do well.
Is there a feeling from these latest polls that Donald Trump's position is strengthening or just solidifying at the moment?
Good question. I think for many, he's holding on to the support he has. He's not showing a lot of signs of growth, though, and that's going to be an issue moving forward. How does he expand his appeal? He came out with details of his immigration plan. It talks about deporting millions of illegal immigrants. It talks about doing away with birthright citizenship, something we've had in this country since the 1800s. So that was something deemed almost too controversial for Republicans in the 2012 election and hurt Mitt Romney.
But not maybe, perhaps not for Donald Trump.
Well, right. And so it's going to be a test. The more he reveals about his policy plans in detail, the more challenged he'll be by his rivals. Now, some of them are kind of following in his footsteps because they don't want to anger that base of support he's generating. But I think as the debates move on, we're going to see more Republicans eager to take him on in a frontal way because they need to somehow puncture into that support he's showing.
Well, let's look at the Democratic side now, and Hillary Clinton's still the front runner, but tell me about some of the problems she's been having with the email situation.
This email controversy, which dates back to her time as Secretary of State, continues to dog her. There are new developments each week as investigators look at whether any classified material was compromised in the exchange of emails. She has said from the beginning that, as far as she knew at the time, nothing was classified that she dealt with. The problem is there's no clear resolution to this in sight, and it has played or fueled the fears that she's not as trustworthy as some of the other candidates. That's reflected in the polls. And for now, it's distracting Hillary Clinton from dealing with issues like college education and the economy that she wants to highlight. And it's helping some of her rivals, especially Senator Bernie Sanders, who's developing quite a following among liberal progressive Democrats.
VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone speaking with International Edition's Michael Lippin. As just explained, the political controversy over the email files of former Secretary of State Clinton shows no sign of ending. A federal judge set a hearing for later this week on whether the State Department is ensuring the retrieval of all official records that Mrs. Clinton and her aides had on personal email accounts or devices from 2009 to 2013 when she stepped down as Secretary of State. The State Department said in a court filing that a partial review of her email showed that 305 of them possibly contained classified information. Mrs. Clinton has said she did not send any classified documents on her personal email account or receive any that were marked classified at the time. We are staying with the poll results for a look at social media reaction. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio to do just that. Welcome, G.
Hi, Ray. So not surprisingly, Donald Trump has been retweeting a lot today. One of the tweets he shared is from MSNBC's Morning Joe. The morning news program is on Twitter at @morning_Joe. It tweeted a screen capture of the CNN ORC poll result and tagged Donald Trump, Jeb Bush, and Ben Carson. That's been retweeted nearly 700 times and marked as a favorite more than 1,000 times since early Tuesday. Ray, there is another topic Trump tweeted twice about Tuesday. Can you guess what it is?
I don't know, Arctic oil drilling or immigration?
I was actually talking about his official hashtag Make America Great Again merchandise, especially the hat. He tweets a lot about the hat, and apparently they're selling really fast.
And how popular actually is the hashtag Make America Great Again?
It was used in almost 8,000 tweets during the last 24 hours and about 110,000 times in the last 30 days.
And what about the other presidential hopefuls like Jeb Bush and Ben Carson? Did they tweet about the poll results?
No, they haven't. And as you know, even Bush is trailing far behind Trump. As Jim mentioned earlier in the Q&A, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are leading in the Democratic side. So I just wanted to mention that Sanders has about 348,000 followers on Twitter, and Clinton has more than 4 million. Donald Trump, for his part, has some 3.8 million followers. Ray?
Thanks for the analysis, G. That was G. Abby Lee, and she's on Twitter at G. Abby Lee, spelled J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. China is Africa's largest trading partner. China's recent devaluation of its yuan could have far-reaching implications. VOA business reporter Alexis Christopher spoke with David Denoon, professor of politics and economics at New York University, about the potential impact on African economies.
The direct effect on Africa is going to be in consumer goods. It'll make Chinese consumer goods more attractive so that Africans are more likely to buy those goods, whereas things that Africa is shipping to China will be more expensive. Therefore, the Chinese will probably buy less of them.
And what about demand for some of the African goods, like the precious metals, like oil? If demand from China really starts to wane, wouldn't that have a negative impact on the overall African economy?
Absolutely. Something like oil is determined by in an international price. Those are bid in international markets. No individual African country can control those. But for precious metals, it depends who controls it, what percentage of the market they have, and so on. So those are less likely to be affected by a devaluation.
Mm-hmm. We've seen that some of the African currencies, like the Rand and Kwanzaa, have been affected. They've fallen sharply since the yuan was devalued. What is the relationship there between the yuan and these other currencies?
The other currencies have to adapt if the country is directly competitive with China. Now, the real question is, to what extent are these countries exporting anything other than raw materials? If they're exporting raw materials, it's the general macroeconomic effect that counts. So as China's economy slows down, they buy fewer raw materials, they need less oil, and therefore there's less demand. But to the extent that these countries are actually producing manufactured goods that are competing with Chinese goods, then they're going to have a tougher time.
Some of the African nations have actually promoted the idea of the Chinese yuan as a reserve currency. Nigeria is one of the countries that's done this. But what does China really need to do to make their currency popular and to see more countries adopt their currency as a reserve currency?
Well, economics is about trade-offs, and the Chinese had to make a tough decision. They're more concerned about the domestic economy than they are about their international objectives. There's absolutely no question that you're right, that the Chinese wanted this and many other countries wanted the yuan to be more widely used. The problem is, now that they've devalued it, the people who are holding yuan are going to have something that's worth roughly 4% less than it was a week ago. So if your currency fluctuates a lot, that makes people less likely to use it. Also, the Chinese have been negotiating with the International Monetary Fund to get the yuan included as one of the items in the special drawing right, which is a combination, like a basket of currencies.
Right.
So, and they're less likely to succeed at that now because people are going to say, we can't be sure that the Chinese won't make very rapid adjustments in the currency.
Politics and economics professor David Dinoon of New York University speaking with VOA business reporter Alexis Christophorus. Greece is facing a major refugee and migrant problem. More than 160,000 have arrived, and the UN Refugee Agency says the dramatically accelerating numbers are overwhelming the country's small islands and causing a humanitarian crisis. Lisa Schlein has details from Geneva.
The pace has been steadily increasing in recent weeks, says the refugee agency. Last month alone, it says more than 50,000 refugees and migrants arrived in Greece, twice as many as arrived during all of last year. It says most are not economic migrants, but refugees from Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq who need international protection and should qualify for asylum. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler tells VOA the lack of reception facilities is worsening the crisis unfolding on Greece's small, inadequately prepared islands.
There is a bottleneck as people need to be registered by the police, but the police is overwhelmed. They are overworked. They have been working for 20 hours nonstop, according to our latest information. They are tired. The refugees as well are very frustrated that have been waiting sometimes for 10, 12, 15 days in conditions that are obviously not adequate. In some cases, they have not received even the most basic assistance. So they are frustrated, they are hot, they are tired, and they want to leave those islands as soon as possible.
Spindler says rising tensions are aggravated by a lack of communication between the new arrivals and police. To try to remedy this, he says the UNHCR has sent to the islands a number of interpreters who can speak Arabic, Farsi, and other languages. Spindler says his agency also is trying to help the authorities set up a system to register the refugees so they can move to the mainland. He notes the conditions in Athens, where most end up, are as poor as they are on the islands. Spindler says Greece needs to show more leadership on the migration issue, but he says most of the refugees and migrants end up in other European countries, so Europe cannot sit back and do nothing. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Attacks by the Islamic State on the Yazidi religious minority in the mountains of northern Iraq have driven thousands of men, women, and children into refugee camps where life remains uncertain and difficult. Small Yazidi immigrant communities in the American heartland are trying to provide relief to their brethren in Iraq and alert the world to their plight. VOA's Greg Flake reports from Katy, Texas.
What haunts Murad Ismail is a cell phone call from a Yazidi woman after ISIL fighters captured her and her companions last year.
They shot four more women, and they threw, I could hear them shooting at the woman, and then they threw them away. They threw their bodies away, and they said their bodies must be kept for the dogs.
Ismail says women who have escaped tell many stories of young girls committing suicide rather than be used as sex slaves.
I mean, this is not fair. This is not fair, and that's the fate of all the Yazidi women who were taken captive.
Last year, when the ISIL attacks began, Ismail and other Yazidis in the Houston area, along with members of a large Yazidi community in Lincoln, Nebraska, formed a group called Yazda. Yazda president Haider Elias says it was difficult at first because few Americans had ever heard of the Yazidis.
We had to introduce them to the Yazidi religion first and then present the issue.
Elias tells people about the Yazidis' religious traditions, which draw influences from Islam and other religions, but draw only scorn from radical Muslims. Yazda operates a relief center in Iraq and is now trying to provide psychological therapy for female victims of rape and abuse. But Haider Elias says the United Nations should do more than set up refugee camps for these victims of attempted genocide.
We've been very frustrated with those great countries that are handling, making major decision for the UN. They're not been doing anything for the Yazidis specifically.
At the end of this month, Murad Ismail plans to return to Iraq to assess the Yazidi situation and gather testimony from ISIL victims. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Katy, Texas.
Coming up, a caffeine buzz may be doing more for your head than you think. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
A heat wave in the Middle East is being blamed for dozens of deaths in Egypt and sending hundreds of people to the hospital. Jordan, too, is feeling the heat. This worker in Amman says he's reworked schedules because of the weather.
We work in the morning, rest at noon, then continue our job at night.
Extreme summer weather poses serious health risks. So to keep safe, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention suggest preparedness as its number one tip, especially if you're caring for children, older adults, or those with chronic medical conditions. Make sure they can get to a cooler area on a hot day. The CDC also warns not to leave children or pets inside of a car on a hot day. When it's parked in the sun, temperatures can soar to 55 to 78 degrees Celsius. Earlier this year in India, more than 2,000 people died in a stifling heat wave. More than 1,000 died in Pakistan. I'm Philip Alexiou for VOA's Living Better.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Many of us who use portable electronic communication devices usually do not have problems accessing an energy source to recharge them. But what about soldiers out in the field? The U.S. Army is testing a new device that could enable portable recharging by harvesting energy from even the slightest breeze. My colleague Susan Yockey spoke with VOA science correspondent George Putich about that electric charging device and asked him how it works.
It's a very interesting device for harvesting the energy from very low wind that cannot turn a turbine, but still has some power. So this new device actually harvests the energy of the wind and turns it into electricity of enough power to charge small electronic devices such as portable communication devices, smartphones, tablet computers, and such.
Well, how flexible is this to take out into the field?
It's very flexible, raining,
muddy, or jungle, or whatever.
Yes, correct. What they had in mind is soldiers in the field, and where they obviously do not have always access to energy sources. So it's a light portable device that can be set up very quickly and can turn into the wind like a wind vane. So if you leave it overnight, for instance, it will charge its supercapacitor, which is another advanced technology for storing electricity. And obviously during the day or during the night, you can connect your device and charge your batteries.
Well, this has been a problem for a long time since the technology age started. How come it's now that we're getting this? Was it advances that they've made that has brought this about?
That's very interesting. Actually, the technology has been around for a long time. As most of us know from high school, if you move a magnet through a coil of wire, it will actually induce some electric power. But the challenge was how to turn the fluttering of a strip of cloth in light wind, how to turn that into movement of the magnet through the coil. And that's what they managed to do, and it proved to be effective.
That was VOA science and technology correspondent George Putich speaking with International Edition's Susan Yockey. If you're listening to this show and just waking up or need to wake up, this is for you. There's no denying the jolt caffeine gives us, and until you've had that first cup of coffee, life's pretty slow. New research shows what caffeine is really doing to our brains to give us that boost of energy. VOA's Maya Pajora explains.
Caffeine is one of the most widely used substances in the world. Many of us have come to depend on that daily dose for energy. But how exactly does caffeine make us buzz? Nora Volkov says it's all in your mind. The neuroscientist, director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, has built her entire career out of studying how the brain is affected by drugs, including, most recently, caffeine.
It makes us feel better, particularly if we haven't slept or we've been actually working very late at night. It helps us concentrate. We really don't completely understand why.
To get to the bottom of our caffeine obsession, Volkov had volunteers swallow caffeine tablets. It's about the same as drinking 2 to 3 strong cups of coffee. She and her colleagues then tracked the buzzed brain's activity using a PET scanner. Like other drugs, caffeine boosts the natural activity of a brain chemical called dopamine. Drugs like cocaine release a flood of dopamine that can lead to addiction. Caffeine works slightly differently. It increases the number of receptors that dopamine can latch onto, which makes us feel perky and alert. Its hold on the brain isn't nearly as strong as cocaine's.
The reality is that caffeine does not produce this compulsive pattern that you see with other drugs at the expense of catastrophic consequences. So in that respect, caffeine is not addictive in the same sense.
So the good news is you can stop drinking coffee whenever you want, with only minor side effects. But it's also okay not to stop if you need that quick pick-me-up to get the day started. Maya Pajara, VOA News, Washington.
Someone in need of a quick pick-me-up without the caffeine is pop music star Robin Thicke. His hit song Blurred Lines boosted his popularity and also generated a lot of controversy. Now Robin Thicke has a new album and released the first single from it. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Border Crossing's host Larry London about the song called Back Together.
You know his song Blurred Lines, and you know the controversy it generated, but Robin Thicke has a new song now, Back Together. Larry, this is his first tune since his second album, which didn't do too well.
That's right. 2013 was Blurred Lines, and then he followed that up a year later with an album called Paula. In a failed attempt to win back his then-estranged wife, Paula Patton, who's an actress, the two officially divorced this past year. And so now he's back. He's got another album called Morning Sun, and it's expected to be released before the end of this year. So we've got the first song off the new album.
And he has some help from some very famous friends.
Absolutely. Right? Timbaland, Max Martin, and he's working with his good friend Pharrell on the new album. They had great success on Blurred Lines, so why not do it again?
Didn't I rock with you all night? Wasn't it good enough? Don't lie. Didn't you tell me that I blew your mind? Brought out the animal in me. Nobody else could tame that beast. Why did you have to go and say goodbye?
Now all I... Now, speaking of Blurred Lines, I understand that Marvin Gaye's family
The settlement between Robin Thicke and Pharrell and Marvin Gaye's family has changed.
That's right. It was $7.1 million, and Robin Thicke took it to court and contested the amount, and so the judge did amend the reward to $5.1 million. Marvin Gaye's family then said, hey, let's go back to court, and the judge said, not again. It's $5.1 million, and that's what the penalty will stand.
Okay, so now Robin Thicke is Alan Thicke's son.
Yes, and Gloria Loring.
And Gloria Loring. Mm-hmm. And he did have a smash. I mean, two summers ago, Blurred Lines, every time you turned on the radio, you were hearing that song.
That song created controversy, if you remember.
Created
twerking on the MTV Music Awards.
I do remember the twerking. I remember that with Miley Cyrus.
Right, right.
And several other young women in various stages of undress. But now, this tune, he has help from Nicki Minaj.
Yes, exactly. He also, by the way, didn't write this song. It was written by somebody else because people thought, well, Back Together, wouldn't that be another attempt to get Paula back? And he said, no. He said, I like the idea and the concept of the song, but no, I can't claim that I wrote it because I didn't. But Nicki Minaj does appear on this particular song. She's hot right now. She's on tour for her own album. She's getting a wax figure at Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. And she took time out to be in his video, which is looking very hot for this song. And she's on the single as well.
All right. Well, if you have any comment about Robin Thicke's new single, Back Together, you can hit Larry up at VOA underscore music. Also, you can listen for his show, Border Crossings. That's on our website, www.voanews.com. If you want to send a tweet to us here at International Edition, that's VOA underscore IE.
Robin. I get more than when they nodding. Kitsy on fleek is popping. I'm every popping. Okay. Just for the record, that hard is what I'm copping. Yeah. Blasting two pockets, some fishnet stocking. You know you missed this ride. M.I.S. missed this pie. Used to call me Hillary because I ride them. Ring, 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 ring. Put a ring on it or ding, 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 ding. Boy, your time's up. Where's your wind up? There's levels to this. You should have climbed up.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news, information, and features on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Armed militants in Mali have stepped up attacks against the United Nations peacekeeping mission and Malian security forces, continuing a deadly campaign aimed at destabilizing the West African nation. The militants laid siege to a hotel in central Mali last week, leaving 17 people dead. The attack began early August 7th and ended after 24 hours when Malian security forces stormed the hotel in the city of Savare. The assailants killed 9 civilians, 5 of whom worked as contractors for the UN mission, and 4 Malian soldiers. An unknown number of attackers died in the assault. On August 9th, gunmen killed 10 civilians in a village in northern Mali. And on August 10th, 3 Malian soldiers were killed in central Mali when their patrol vehicle hit a landmine. These incidents show that despite the peace agreement signed in June between northern armed groups and the government, much work still needs to be done to restore security to the country. The United States commends all parties, the government of Mali, the CMA, and the platform, for their commitment to resolving their differences through dialogue, not violence. Implementing the peace agreement won't be easy or immediate. It will require dedication and steady, sustained attention in order to succeed. We urge all parties to commit to resolving future differences through the mechanisms within the accord. The parties have arrived at this agreement through a patient process of dialogue and negotiation. This peace will be achieved through hard work, mutual understanding, and cooperation. We urge all parties to the agreement to maintain the same patience, dialogue, and will to reconcile differences as they move forward.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
is for, what's the universe of